At the tone, the time will be exactly...
Time for the Mo Kelly Show.
Set it off, Mr. Mo Kelly.
KFI AM 640, we're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. Sisters Christina and Vicky receive an early Christmas gift, a luxurious vacation at an exclusive resort from their Aunt Debbie, who hopes to bring them together after they've grown apart since their mother's death. The sisters are less than thrilled by the idea of spending time together for the holidays. Such sets the stage for A Sisterly Christmas, which premieres Tuesday, December 7th at 9 p.m. on OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network. And joining me right now are two of the stars. First, acclaimed gospel singer Deborah Joy Winans, who takes on the role of Christina. Deborah, welcome back to the Mo Kelly Show.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Good to talk to you again. And also pleased to be joined by actor Kendrick Cross, who plays Keith, Christina's love interest, because it's not a Christmas movie without a love interest. Kendrick, good to have you on as well this evening.
Thanks so much, Mo. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Kendrick, let me start with you. I've seen you in Genius, the Aretha Franklin story, Clint Eastwood's movie about Richard Jewell, Queen Sugar, and so many other places. I mention that because a Christmas movie would seem like a different experience altogether. Do you have any ritual to help you get into the Christmas spirit to do a movie? And you're probably filming not during the holidays.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's funny. This was my first Christmas movie, I think. Yeah. So really it's the environment we were put in. We did it at a place that is known to film Christmas movies. So they had all the decorations out. They had a Christmas tree farm that we went to, you know, even the clothing. We generally think of Christmas as being cold, snowy. We didn't have snow, but things like that is what, and it's very easy when you have a cast that's super talented and everything they do helps bring you into that moment. So, you know, after reading the script, you know, we just have to put ourselves in that atmosphere and that mentally in the spirit of Christmas. And that's what I did.
Deborah, I think about the whole idea of Christmas and family, and you yourself come from a big family. It's no secret to anyone. What is it about Christmas writ large and family, which also breeds these wonderful memories and also for some families, a lot of concern about what might happen?
Well, I think that, you know, the holidays in general will bring about a lot of love, a lot of joy and happiness. But also, as you go through life, people lose loved ones during the holiday. And so trying to face that holiday again is really, really hard and traumatic. And then, you know, because of certain losses or pain, people just grow apart. And so when you were close, like Vicky and Christina Marshall were, and then all of a sudden, you know, you lose your mother at Christmas. And then that becomes a time where, you know, one of you tries to process it one way and the other one tries to process it a different way. And you guys just don't connect. And so you end up going further and further and further apart. And that's just real life. That's very relatable. And so I think what's lovely about this is that people will see really themselves in these situations. And hopefully it will cause a good conversation to come about and maybe some change and maybe some understanding. And I love that about Christina and Keith's relationship. There's a lot of understanding of why she is the way she is and why she's hurt. And then trying to navigate through that hurt and be open to love and living life the way it was meant to be lived.
Kendrick, Deborah opened the door very nicely to my next question as we talk about A Sisterly Christmas and how this plot plays itself out. Your character, Keith, obviously is there, I would say, to help complicate the plot and also arguably help provide the solution. Tell me about Keith. How does he insert himself and what does he stumble upon when we meet him?
So Keith is a part owner in Fisher Resort, and he prides himself with making it what it is today. This beautiful, luxurious resort catered to African-American people. And, you know, they're all about customer service, customer care. You know, I don't want to say bougie, but it's more an upscale. So he's not, I can say bougie.
Yeah, we'll call it bougie.
It's an upscale experience. It's an upscale experience. So he's used to, you know, the more rich, maybe even a little snooty type people coming in. And then in comes this beautiful chocolate sister with an edge to her. You know, she has an attitude. She doesn't have the Christmas spirit in her. And I think he sees that as a challenge. And not only is he, you know, his interest piqued by her beauty, the challenge of her edginess and how he could possibly help her become a better person.
Deborah, you said something in your last answer, which I'm still ruminating over. When you talk about the holidays and how for many families, it is surrounded with the thoughts of the loss of a loved one, and a sisterly Christmas hits that head on. Is there anything that you took personally into this role, or you found yourself in Christina, which would avail itself on the screen? In other words, how much is Christina like you, or you like Christina, if that makes sense?
I think that we're certainly alike in the way of having gone through loss, and sometimes it makes you a little bit more closed off. And I think that's what she is. I think that instead of truly dealing with the loss of her mother, she just sort of closes everyone off and everything off when it comes to Christmas time, because everything was too much. And so I think for me, that's a lot like me. I don't like confrontation. I don't like having to really deal with the hard stuff. If I can keep it to myself, if I can just sort of move past it without talking or really delving into it, then I will. And I think that's a lesson, because that's not good. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, as I have learned, I think Christina also learns that it's not good to keep it inside, because it's still, you're not going through it. It's just, you're putting a lid on it. And at some point it's going to explode. And I think that's what you get to see on A Sisterly Christmas. You get to see Christina and Vicky sort of come head to head and things explode. And hopefully they end up better. But you'll see on Tuesday night.
That's right.
On OWN at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And there you have it. A Sisterly Christmas premieres Tuesday, December 7th at 9 p.m. As you heard, Deborah Joy Winans let us know. The Oprah Winfrey Network, A Sisterly Christmas. I want to thank my guests, Deborah Joy Winans and Kendra Cross, who play Christina and Keith, respectively.
Yes.
Thank you both for coming on this evening. Congratulations on the movie, and we'll be watching.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
And happy holidays to you.
This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now let's go to Mark Ronner in the KFI newsroom.
Federal prosecutors have charged a woman from Mission Viejo who entered the U.S. Capitol when a mob stormed it to overturn the 2020 presidential election.
Kelly Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. And I have this thing, this back and forth with Shannon Farron. Every weekend, she will go do her thing with the Chargers, be it home or away. But she also likes to root for her home team, the San Francisco 49ers. I am a Rams fan through and through. 49ers and Rams are bitter enemies. So whenever the Rams lose, I usually expect a text message from her talking mess. And when the Rams win and or the 49ers lose, I usually send it back in her way. Today, the 49ers lost. Today, the Rams won. Today, I am a happy man, and I'm giving it to Shannon Farron via text message right now, talking all sorts of mess. As a matter of fact, I went to SoFi Stadium today for the first time. Got to see the game.
How was that?
It was fantastic. And I've grown up a Rams fan, so the only football games that I've seen have been in the Coliseum. Most recently, I saw the Rams beat the Seattle Seahawks. I think it was 2018 or 2019. It was not long before COVID. The season before COVID. And so everything is going to be compared directly to that. In the interest of full disclosure, I live about 3-4 miles away from SoFi Stadium. So it's really close, and it's something I've really been looking forward to doing. It's not down the street, but close enough.
Yeah.
If you go to SoFi Stadium, I highly recommend
Uber if you can, for this reason. Parking, you can park at the Forum, which is like across the street. That's only, air quotes, only $75. If you want to park next to the stadium, that's $90. Yes.
No.
Whatever you pay for Uber is going to be less than that.
Oh, my God.
The stadium itself is absolutely gorgeous as far as sight lines, the way they have the light come in. Now, if you may have heard the story about 3 or 4 weeks ago, they had to delay the start of a game
because of lightning.
Okay, because of lightning, right?
Yeah, the lightning. It was the wet random rainstorm on the Monday night and the lightning because the ends are open.
Right. But also, by looking at the ceiling, it's like a plexiglass or something. If lightning were to come through, that plexiglass was not going to stop anything. So it might as well call it an open-air stadium for all intents and purposes. What did you think when you went?
Well, outside of the shenanigans of all the weather, which kind of delayed the game, that was the stadium's amazing. Outside of the traffic and all the nonsense, getting to and from the stadium, still a hassle because it's L.A., basically. But the stadium is amazing. Just looking at it, walking around, the sounds, just the way with the light displays. Because I was at a quote-unquote Chargers home game because I went to Raiders Chargers.
Oh,
so that, and I'm you put a
your life
fan.
You put your life in your own hands, didn't
well,
you?
As a Raiders fan, it didn't really matter. It was a fun.
You ain't scared of no Charger fans.
Oh, absolutely not. It was like 75% Raider fans. But the stadium SoFi is amazing, and it's fun when you like fly into LAX and they like dip down right before that. That's a great sightline too.
Now I got to ask you: did you park or did you Uber?
So it was like a family affair, and we unfortunately parked and took the two-hour ride home just to leave 2 miles from the stadium,
right.
and then eventually we hit the freeway.
If you're not familiar with the area, the stadium is on Manchester Boulevard, which is two lanes in each direction. It is not built to handle the traffic which comes with a major stadium. Think of it almost like leaving Dodger Stadium. It's like a choke point. When people are trying to get onto Manchester, which actually goes down to one lane because they have one lane dedicated to letting people out of the stadium onto Manchester. So you only have like one actual lane of traffic flowing down Manchester. We had to walk literally about a mile to a mile and a quarter just to get to a point where an Uber driver could pick us up. They call it the rideshare area. That's BS. They're saying, walk as far as you can, and then when you can't walk any further, walk some more, and then try to get an Uber. In fact, the Uber, if you try to get an Uber anywhere near the stadium, it's going to cost you at least $45, $50, which is still less than parking.
Less
right.
than the 75 or 90 you're talking about.
Right. We walked down from the stadium down to Crenshaw and Manchester, where traffic starts opening up. And that Uber to go 2 miles home was, I think, like $38. But I'll take it because I'm not paying $90 for parking. The food was reasonably priced. When I say reasonably, as far as, like, if you go to Disneyland, the food costs way more at Disneyland than it would at SoFi Stadium.
Okay.
And they had a wide variety and array of foods. I think Zach would tell you the same. They had a lot of food offerings. And food was very accessible. You didn't have to wait in these long lines. The way it's set up, there's a food stand every 20, 30 feet, and they have enough registers, and there's no cash. You have to use your card. It moves so damn quick. You don't have to spend a lot of time in line. And if you don't want to go back to your seat, that's cool, because you can see the game while you're in line or just go to the edge and just stand there. The sight lines are just beautiful.
The edge is awesome. You can get your food and then walk to the edge.
Right.
Just look, it's awesome.
So I highly recommend if you get a chance to go to a game, even if it's a Chargers game like Zach, you know, even if you're a Raiders fan like Zach and Tawala, you know, no judgment, not a lot, but a little judgment. Go to SoFi Stadium. It was really, really, it was a really good in-stadium experience. Loud as hell. That was one thing I didn't like. And I work in radio, so you think I'd be a little more easygoing when it comes to loudness? No, it was really loud. Maybe just because I'm old now, so everything seems too loud, but it was like, wow, loud. When they were doing the in-game experience stuff, you know, like, everyone, yeah, woo! It was wow loud.
So I can imagine a concert there, because typically, you know, like back in the day when I was producing concerts, we did not do stadiums because it's open air and the sound just dissipates. You can't ever really hear. You're saying that in this place, kind of, the sound would be, it would be good.
It's kind of held in because it's mostly enclosed. At each end of the stadium, they have these like pillars, columns, almost like Coliseum-esque, where sound obviously can escape. But for the most part, it's enclosed. Mm. You can see through it, but it's enclosed and it's really loud. Now, they just had BTS. From where I live, you can very faintly hear it. It's really loud.
Wow.
But it was a great time. They had the Rams Mariachi. They had the UCLA band performing. It was very, very LA-centric experience. Good time. A lot of drunk people. But, oh, this is a real important part. It was a family experience. Can't speak for the Raider game / Chargers. But for the Rams and Jaguars today, it was mostly families. I did not see any type of fights anywhere in the stadium. I did not see any type of hooligans. A lot of drunk folks. But it was just very easygoing. And I was surprised at that, because even when I went to a Rams game at the Coliseum, it was rougher. It was much rougher.
Maybe I think the last time I saw the Raiders were over there, there was a few fights.
Yeah, the Coliseum or at SoFi?
No, SoFi.
Oh, well, yeah, I think there's 40 extra minutes to drink before kickoff. After the
that's
delay.
True. And I did not see tailgating. It's almost like maybe that's not allowed, or maybe I was just in a different part of the stadium. I did not see any tailgating like you would in the Coliseum.
I didn't see that either.
Maybe because the parking is so precious, in the sense that they need every single spot for parking. They don't have room for just tailgating.
It won't get better when the Clippers move into Inglewood.
That's right. I don't know where that building's supposed to be in relation to the Forum, but it's supposed to be within that 3-block radius, because I believe they are sharing the parking lot with SoFi as well. Or SoFi wants to get a piece of that parking with the new Clippers arena. Mm. It's great. It's great for my property value. Don't get me wrong. Love that. Traffic, people have been complaining about that and the cost of rent in the area, but it's a damn good stadium. LA is really, between that and the Bank of California Stadium for the football club, some premium stadiums out here now.
What about the Crypto Arena?
KFI AM 640, we're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. I hate you, Twala. Mark Rotter has the news.
You're killing me in here. A judge is denying the Los Angeles City Firefighter Union's request for a preliminary injunction that would prevent enforcement of...
Oh my God, Becky.
What the f***?
Oh, hell no!
Oh, hell no!
You gotta be kidding me.
What the f***?
KFI AM 640, we're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Bo Kelly Show. And I'm not really a doomsday type of guy. Near the beginning of the show, I was talking about how the Omicron variant, you had those doomsday people out there saying, oh my gosh, it's Omicron. I'm saying, like, slow down. You know, we were in a bad way last year, but Omicron is not that. But there's some other things going on in the world. I just got to say WTF. And if I were a doomsday prepper or someone who thought the idea of Armageddon was real, I would probably be taking note of what was going on right now. And I'd have to think back in the day, when I say back in the day, biblical times, you probably wouldn't know about the end of the world because there was no way to communicate about things that were going on around the world. If you know anything about the Bible, it's all about this area in Mesopotamia, what we later called Mesopotamia. You know, how would they know what is going on in Hawaii back then? You know, how would they know what's going on in China, whatever? You know, they didn't have that level of communication. Now, we pieced together history later on, but there was no way to know in the moment. But since we have this thing called technology and the internet, we know now in the moment what's going on all around the world. And there are these strange occurrences going on right now. And I was having a conversation with Jane Wells, CNBC's Jane Wells, KFI's own Jane Wells. She's in Hawaii right now. It's not a big secret. She put it on her Facebook page. And if you know what's going on in Hawaii, well, Hawaii's not hell, but Hawaii, for the most part, is hot. And when Hawaii's getting ready to freeze over or have a blizzard, it gives me pause, because that's not a normal occurrence. You know, we'll get snow sometimes in LA, but it doesn't stick. Or if you go to Lancaster, it will stick. You know, you get some snow in Vegas, but for the most part, West Coast,
it comes and goes.
Yeah. And I've lived on the Coast, and I know what getting snow is like. Twala, you lived on the East Coast.
Yes.
You know what that's like, okay? We don't get that type of snow, even when it gets real cold. But when they're talking about getting blizzard weather in Hawaii, that gives me pause, okay? Something is different. I'm not going to go into the whole climate change conspiracy. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just saying that ish is weird right about now in the world. Okay? That's just Hawaii. Then they had hundreds, and I mean hundreds, of dead birds just falling out of the sky. Just literally falling out of the sky for seemingly no reason. About 200 starlings suddenly died midair and plummeted to the pavement. And this is near a hospital in Spain.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Just birds. You see them flying around and they just...
Not only is that a hazard for us on the ground, okay? It's just one of those things where it's really, really unsettling. And birds dying all of a sudden, that's been in a lot of disaster movies.
Yeah.
So it makes me think of that.
It is reminiscent of something biblical.
Yes.
A la Hawaii, a.k.a. hell freezing over. Not that Hawaii is hell, but I get the analogy now. I see where you're going with this. Yes.
And then, again, tying this all together as far as all these things which are happening at once around the world, we wouldn't have known it back in the day because we wouldn't have been able to communicate with one another or been knowledgeable what was happening in a different part of the world. Let's go to Indonesia. All this is this week, or actually fewer days ago, less than a week. In Indonesia, 14 people were killed and dozens more were injured by a volcano, which erupted almost spontaneously, unforeseen. That's why they died. They weren't ready for it.
Yeah.
At least 41 people suffered lava burns. Lava burns. I'm not saying it's Pompeii. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, when was the last time you heard of anyone getting lava burns? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? No, I can't think of it. Yeah, 41 people suffered lava burns, and the lava nearly destroyed this village I can't pronounce, caused a bridge to collapse, making evacuation all but impossible. Now, Indonesia's disaster mitigation agency said the death toll is up to 14 and the number of injured to about 56. That's kind of unusual. Does it mean it's the end of the world? I don't know. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying I realize it's not often that this happens, okay? Much less all these things happen at once in the same week.
That's part. The part that bothers me the most is you're getting snow in Hawaii, volcanoes in Indonesia, and birds flying just out of the sky, just dropping, hitting cars, hitting passerbys, hitting patients for all we know.
Cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. Zach doesn't even know that movie. He has no idea what that movie is.
Oh, Zach.
You have no idea where that line comes from.
No.
Oh, my heart.
Okay, what I want you to do during the break is Google cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. And then when we come back, you tell me where it's from, okay?
You got me to watch Die Hard last year, though, so.
I remember, and we're coming upon, Die Hard Christmas Eve again. Mm-hmm. So trust me on this as well. This is another movie which I think you'll probably enjoy. In fact, if you see this movie that I'm telling you about, you'll probably want to see another movie which is in theaters right now, which directly connects to it. There's a hint. Cats and dogs living together. Mass hysteria. This is the Mo Kelly Show. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Mark Ronner has the news.
I might also have a hint. Encanto, Ghostbusters Afterlife, and House of Gucci repeated in the top three spots during a slow box office weekend.
Attention shoppers, the new Atari cartridge game is in.
With the Betamax at your command, you'll never again be deprived of watching whatever program you desire.
The movie iRobot, Will Smith, came out in 2004. I think that movie was highly underrated.
Terrible, terrible movie. A war crime of a movie. Isaac Asimov was lucky to have been dead when that came out.
You're wrong.
Okay.
I think the movie was highly underrated, only because... What?
No, I agree with Mark. I'm like, if you read the book, you would look at that movie and like, why did you bother calling this iRobot? Call it Will Smith and an angry robot. Call it whatever you want.
I am judging the movie. I'm not talking about whether it was true to the vision of Isaac Asimov. Okay. That's not the point I'm trying to make. All right. They're like, I'm an Arthur C. Clarke fan, and I don't think the movies have done justice to the books, but I have to separate. I think of the movies in their own subset for just movies. Yeah, I compartmentalize. Okay. All right. Anyhow, as I was saying, and I want to get back to you, Zach. Don't think I've forgotten about your behind. All right. But the movie iRobot, as far as this visual representation of where robotics could lead in America, I think was spot on. And that was 2004, the movie, and what we saw as far as what these robots could look like in our society, our present day society. There is this robotics company, and it's called Engineered Arts. It's a UK-based robotics company. They have this new invention, a humanoid robot that can display human-like expressions and seeming emotions. That's why I'm talking about this. In fact, I just tweeted out the link to this robot, which they're calling the Ameca, A-M-E-C-A. I just tweeted out at Mr. Mokelly, M-R-M-O-K-E-L-L-Y. And it shows this robot seemingly wake up, gasping for air, and these human-like facial expressions, which were, if you go back to the movie iRobot, which is set, the movie, can't speak for the book, but the movie is set in 2035. And if you see what I just tweeted out, and if you're familiar with the movie iRobot, we are right on schedule for what was shown in iRobot to be a reality in our world in 13 and a half years. If you look at what this Ameca robot can do.
13, you give it that long? We've already got
the technology there, but I'm saying, but in terms of it being ubiquitous, like we'd have a robot in our homes.
Gotcha. Kind
of
thing. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
No, the technology is just about there now. It's not that far off.
Yeah.
Well, we can, because we already seen that the robots we've seen with Boston Dynamics, which are ambulatory and they can lift weights, they can open doors and do all sorts of tasks.
No, I mean, this thing, you got
to jump and dance. Yeah.
It's aware for the most part.
Yeah. It makes you think, ooh, okay. Ameca must be like, I don't know, the slang for Skynet.
Hey.
Because it seems like we're just about there. Once it gets to the point where these robots are self-aware, we're done. Because the technology is such, we have this obsession with this God complex, I'll call it, making these things in our likeness. Mm-hmm. I guess there's something that we can't improve upon the human form. Like they said in Age of Ultron, you can't get past that human form. The hand with the opposable thumb. We see how it's essential in everything we do as far as holding tools and manipulating objects. We can't improve upon that. We haven't been able to improve upon that. So everything that we've done has been an extension of how we see ourselves. Mm-hmm. Making things in our image. And, you know, once they figure out that they don't need us anymore, we're done.
But if you also look at, there's a story that we did a while ago about uploading your consciousness by way of the Dyson sphere.
Yes.
And being able to just live eternally there. And you're like, I don't want to be a bunch of, you know, ones and zeros.
No, but I said, I don't want to be a stereo on a shelf.
Okay. You don't want to be a stereo on a shelf. But now you look at this thing and it's breathing. It's looking. It's touching itself. It looked excited to wake up in the morning or whatever. Now you upload your consciousness into this, you know, Ameca bot. And now, and then if you could put an overlay of synthetic skin on it, look, you're living forever as an Ameca bot.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I'm not so sure that we're anywhere near the technology of uploading consciousness.
Or never even downloading. Say never.
No, I'm saying I don't think we're near. I didn't say that we couldn't do it. I'm just saying I don't think we're close.
No, Elon Musk had the monkey who's playing Pong. If the monkey can play Pong, we can upload ourselves through the Dyson sphere.
Wait. I don't think that's connected. Bot. I don't think that's connected.
It might not be connected, but I'm saying it's not impossible.
Well, no. I believe all things are possible through technology.
Yes.
But I don't think we're necessarily close to all things. I think we're still in our infancy as far as technology goes. But I really don't appreciate you and Mark disagreeing with me about iRobot. Just got to put that out there.
That's my red line. It's miserable.
I'm sorry. It was a bad movie.
Yeah. I don't care who knows that I think that.
Yeah.
Still wrong. Anyhow, Zach, did you learn anything about movies during the commercial break?
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Yes, but when I was younger, so I wouldn't have caught that reference. But I have seen the movie.
Well, of course you would have seen it when you were younger. It came out in 1984, so either you weren't born or you're really, really younger. Okay, so if you haven't seen it recently, I would recommend going and seeing it again. And then, as Mark kind of hinted during his last commercial news break, go see Ghostbusters Afterlife. I thought it was a fitting sequel and tribute to the original Ghostbusters of 1984. And so I would recommend actually seeing them back to back. If you have any desire to see Ghostbusters Afterlife, see this right before the original Ghostbusters, right before seeing the sequel, because it is in every way a direct sequel. You know, I have some friends who didn't like Ghostbusters Afterlife, and it was phenomenal, and they're wrong, and Mark is wrong about iRobot. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be fallible, all right?
I forgive you for what you're saying about iRobot. We're in the holiday season, and I'm okay letting that go. But I've been resisting Ghostbusters Afterlife. Can you say anything more about it without spoiling it?
Yes. It's almost like it's a love letter to the original spirit of Ivan Reitman. It's directed by Jason Reitman. It's a love letter to the comedic genius of Harold Ramis and Caddyshack and all of that. There's fan servicing in there, but it's not to the point of just being gratuitous. There are so many nods to the original, not only in story, there's a reason for it. It's justified the way they lay out the story. But also it's a fitting acknowledgement of the absence of Harold Ramis.
This is what I needed, because the trailer was terrible to me. I didn't want to see a kid Ghostbusters movie.
But it really is.
Yeah.
The kids are so, they fit. And it's like you can watch this and say the legacy of the Ghostbusters is in safe hands. You will watch this movie, and if you're a fan of the original, like, I'm clapping, cheering.
I got teary-eyed.
Yes. No.
Well, I don't want to cry.
No, but Mark,
I don't know how you're going to respond.
Yeah. So good. So good.
Highly recommend. We didn't have a chance to talk about it, or I didn't have a chance to talk about it. Really enjoyed that movie. It was a fitting sequel. But iRobot, I hope they do a sequel to that as well, just to piss you guys off.
Damn you to hell, man.
The 11th annual KFI Pastathon is here, helping Chef Bruno provide over 25,000 meals to hungry kids every week. All donations go to Katerina's Club, feeding children in Southern California. Donate at pastathon.com.
KFI.
And KOST HD2.
Los Angeles, Orange County.